Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio, Bob engineering and producing the show. Together, we give you a big, hearty welcome to the to the Buckmaster Show for this Thursday, December 20th, 2018. You're listening to AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk, with our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and, of course, 24/7, we're at kvoi.com. All of our podcasts, the complete show archive, available at buckmastershow.com. We will begin our ninth year with the radio project on January the 2nd, so hard to believe. That would be eight full years for the program, and then we'll kick it off in January as we begin year number nine. Our live line number, 790-2040. On the live line right now is Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek, a Democrat representing Ward number 6. Councilman, how are you, sir?
Doing absolutely wonderfully. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for asking. Of course, we had the mayor, Mayor Rothschild, announcing over the weekend through an article in the Arizona Daily Star that he will not seek a third four-year term. You were very quick to say you're just not interested in the job.
Well, I guess I wouldn't phrase it quite exactly that way, but you know, it's an important position. I was disappointed to hear Jonathan is not going to run again. I think he's done a very good job. He stepped into the saddle as we were coming out of a recession, and with him at the helm, we have really successfully continued the upward trajectory we had seen prior to him sitting, being elected as mayor, and the downtown revitalization. We've continued that. We have settled litigation with the Rio Nuevo board and are now working joined at the hip on some very, very successful projects in the downtown area. And, you know, the relationship is positive. We have really resolved the differences that we had prior to that with the county. And so we really have a good thing going right now with respect to the city government, county government, Rio Nuevo Board, and a lot of good positive economic development. So Jonathan has really, really done a good job in sort of helping us to right the ship. It's an important position. That position is effectively a CEO of a $1 billion operation. We, the city council, work hand in hand with him, city manager, and all the department heads to keep things going in the right direction. My decision was based largely on the fact that, number one, I would have to resign my council seat in order to run. And this is not a time that I want to step away from the city council for the next year to run a political campaign. We have some very important topics, many of which you and I have spoken about before, that are really right now that I'm knee-deep in. One, just Tuesday of this week, we moved another step forward in the rezoning process of the Benedictine Monastery. That project will now enter the formal rezoning phase, and this is not a time that I just want to walk away from that. There's been too much invested in getting us to the point that we are now.
Yeah, and I think a quick clarification, Rahina Romero can run. She may run, very well run for mayor, and she would not have to resign. Paul Durham, Councilman Durham, has talked a little bit about he's investigating it. Now, he would, because of the way his reelection would come up. So this is an important point, isn't it?
Right. So the law is that if you are in the last year of your term, then you do not have to resign to run. You can continue to sit in your council seat and do the business of the council member. You simply cannot run for two positions simultaneously. So Rahina, Paul Cunningham, and Shirley Scott's a different case because she just announced that she is not going to run again. But for Rahina and for Paul Cunningham, they could continue on in their council seats and simultaneously run for mayor. But they can't run for their wards 1 and 2 seats at the same time. So if they were, for instance, to run for mayor and lose, then they're simply out of, you know, off the council and off the, you know, and not involved anymore. But you're right; they can do both simultaneously. For me, for Durham, for Fimbres, we would each have to quit the seat and just vacate the seat, and the council would appoint a new person to take our place. And that person would be in the saddle until 2021. So not something I want to do. So the monastery is one big deal.
Yeah, let's get an update on that, because in your monthly visits with us, we've been following the progress on this. What is the bottom line now as we get ready to close out 2018?
Well, on Tuesday we voted to adopt what's called a neighborhood plan amendment. And just in layman's terms, what that does is it says that what is being proposed for the site can be built, and now the developer has to go through a formal rezoning process. It was not nearly as simple to achieve as the way that just sounded. We have achieved four very important pieces to this. Number one is that the monastery will be preserved. Number two, it will not be student housing. The third is that we have significantly reduced the massing in comparison to what was initially proposed. And finally, the developer has committed to a public use of the monastery. If you'll recall, the way the conversation started, about a year ago now, when the property was first purchased, the underlying zoning would allow the developer to go in and knock down the monastery, raise the and just blade the six and a half acre site and put up four-story student housing project on it, and put up to about 660 beds. That would eliminate the monastery, and it would put student housing in immediately adjacent to some historic residential neighborhoods. That's where we started. And so the people who have objections to the direction this is heading now, which is high-end apartments on the same site, but all the other amenities that I just mentioned as well as preservation and public use and all that, they have to understand that we weren't talking about, gee, what would be a great thing to do with this monastery and this site. That wasn't the conversation. The conversation was, do you want it to be student housing and demolish the monastery?
Right.
So that was square one. So what we did about 6 or 7 months ago was I brought to the council the initiation of an historic landmark designation on the building. And that really changed the tenor of the conversation, because if the city were to move forward with that rezoning and put a historic landmark designation on it, that would prevent demolition. That took that one chip off the table for the developer at the time. He was saying, I can always just sell this to a student housing company, have it demolished. Well, now you can't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
because we initiated that rezoning. It changed the conversation. We still had to work through some massing issues. He initially wanted 86 feet, 7 stories that would have subsumed the monastery. And we're down to 55 feet maximum. He's agreed to 3 stories on the country club side, which that the front end of his housing project will be no further to the west, which is towards Country Club, than the existing face of the monastery. So you're going to be able to see, the architecture without having to be standing immediately in front of it. Public use, and that conversation is yet to happen as well. So we've really made a lot of progress. I understand people would like it if the nuns would just move back in and rewind the tape and make things as if this conversation never happened. That's not going to happen. The guy paid $6 million for the place, and he's going to do something with it. So.
Is he happy with the way things are going, Ross?
Ross Rolney.
Yeah, is he happy with? Does he feel he can make some money under these conditions?
Yeah, he could make more. Quite frankly,
sure.
If he sold it to an out-of-state student housing real estate investment trust and mm-hmm. just walk away. But, Ross lives in the community. His wife works on campus. He's a member of this community. And I'll give him high marks for saying, this is not all simply about making as much money as I can. This is about being a responsible developer, and let's see what we can do with it. He has had quite a significant number of expressions of interest in the high-end apartment complex that he's talking about there. Mm. He does not want to make it a for-sale product, which is to say build single-family residences. He's in the business of being a department manager, but he's committed to not just build a low-end, low-scale,
right.
stick-and-stucco kind of a project. This is going to be high-end and something that people from Banner or the U of A or people downsizing from the foothills moving down, they want to be closer to the downtown core, can move into and have a nice places. So,
all right.
So that's kind of where we are. Yeah, he's pleased with the direction, I guess is the simplest way to phrase it.
Councilman Steve Kasachek will stick around for another segment. Right now, Councilman, you know what I'm going to talk about, my favorite bakery.
Danish pastry.
That's right, Mona's Danish Bakery, up on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And I know you're out on your runs. Your runs are, I don't want to say the kind of even lowland. You don't really do that run up to the foothills.
Well, I would have a destination now, right?
if I were to. That's what I'm getting at, yeah. That in case you want to do a little extra running, Mona's Danish Bakery is the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They've got all of the Christmas cookies and, of course, what they're most famous for. And we brought one here to the station on Friday, thanks to Steve, the owner and chief baker, the Danish Kringle, which went very quickly. Everybody enjoyed that. So stop by Mona's. They're open right now for lunch. Order all of your Christmas pies and your baked goods and have a Danish Kringle Christmas Eve morning or Christmas morning. That would be perfect. Mona'sDanishBakery.com for more information. We'll be right back with Councilman Steve Kasachek. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Edition, Thursday before Christmas. Christmas now just about 5 days away. That means now is the time to do the holiday decorating and pick up those poinsettias from Green Things. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. After you pick up some of those homegrown poinsettias in all those great colors that are available, then stop on the same property, Zocalo Village. All that great merchandise from Mexico. I suggested the other day, rather than do the Christmas tree, and, you know, some people think it's a big hassle, you know, it's the tree will... If it's a live tree, eventually it will become a dead tree. So, but what about at Zocalo, these beautifully done tin, handmade tin Christmas trees for your home from Zocalo Village at Green Things? So there's an idea. It's going to be around for many Christmases. Start a new tradition this year over at Green Things. GreenThingsAZ.com. Let's go back to our conversation with Steve Kasachek, who is the Ward 6 Democrat council member. Councilman, have you decorated your home already now for Christmas?
Christmas and all holiday decorations are a piece of cake for me because my wife takes care of every single bit of it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she loves Christmas trees and Santas, and so we have like a dozen Christmas trees and, you know, hundreds of Santas spread throughout the house. And
wow.
So, yeah, that's her gig, and I'm perfectly happy to sit back and watch her perform her magic.
There you go. Overall, you know, this time of year, as we get ready to close the books on 2018, it is a time of reflection. Would you say this has been a pretty darn good year for the city? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, and that's another one of the reasons that I don't want to step away at this point to just enter a political campaign. You know, we have... I mentioned the downtown area that we've got. The downtown projects we have going. Within the last couple of weeks, I've been downtown to do pre-construction meetings with some developers who are building very significant in La Placita and another hotel and another mixed use down there. We got the cathedral project going on. So there's some really significant projects happening in the downtown core. It's economic development. It's not simply residential. It's retail as well, and that's the basis on which we really sustain our budget. Also this year, positive note, we are, again, operationally balanced on the city budget side, and so we, you know, that's something that when I started this in 2009, we were facing $40 million deficits, and it's a significant change. We saw Prop 407, the parks bond, pass, which was very positive, and Prop 101, of course, the public safety and the road bonds pass. And so we've had a really good year in terms of demonstrating to the public that we are going to continue to, we have and going to continue managing your money effectively and responsibly, and the voters in two different occasions said, yeah, we agree with that, and we're willing to step up to the plate and make an investment in the capital infrastructure, the parks, the roads, and the police and fire that I just mentioned. So I think we do have a good thing going right now, and certainly not a time to walk away from it and just start running for some political office.
You know, it's nice. I see more and more of our police cruisers, the little vans. They're not so little, but they're nice vans. They're new vehicles. I don't see a lot of the old cars out there anymore, the old patrol cars. That's good news.
They've already started making purchases under Prop 101. We have an oversight commission that's in place made up of citizens who are making sure that those dollars go exactly where they were intended. And similarly with the firefighters, we're buying new equipment for them as well, and we're just beginning the design phase for some of the remodeling of both the firehouses and the police substations. So those dollars are already starting to work, and it is partially responsible for the retention, our retention rates and recruitment successes for both police and fire. Our applicants and incumbents are taking note that the community values what they're doing. We also just gave pay raises to them all as well, and so we are now seeing some of the police officers who jumped ship and went to some of the other surrounding jurisdictions actually return to TPD. They're seeing that the grass wasn't necessarily greener, and they're coming home, and we're happy to have them. Another thing that you'll see changing here in the very near future with respect to police is we have a group of non-commissioned officers called community service officers, CSOs. We are going to hire about 100 of them, and right now we have 10 going through a particularly unique program called a Park Ranger program. And the Park Rangers will be their CSOs. And they'll be assigned to some of our parks to just be a direct point of contact with people in the parks. So when minor issues happen, or they run across a homeless person who might need access to services, it's not a matter of calling a police officer who might have higher priority calls at the time and won't be able to get there for a while. So that'll be that'll serve a number of functions for us. Number one, that direct relational point of contact in the parks. It'll build on the Prop 407. We're going to invest in the parks. We're going to make sure that people have the opportunity to enjoy them. CSOs are also a good recruiting source for commissioned police officers. People get a chance to go through and kind of dip their toe in the water and see, is this something I really want to get involved with? And it'll help us from a budgetary standpoint, because obviously they don't make as much as a commissioned officer does. So yeah, a lot of good things happening with public safety agencies, and the Park Rangers is another one that's kind of building on the successes we've had last year.
Are all the so-called cabinet-level positions now filled at the City of Tucson? Do we have a new transportation director in place?
Diana Alarcon is our new transportation director. She came to us from Fort Lauderdale. I'm really excited to be working with her.
I need to get her on the show.
Yeah, you really do. And one of the reasons I'm excited to be working with her is because we are about to, in early January, consider what's called a complete streets policy. Something that Diana was working on already in Fort Lauderdale, so it's not going to be new to her. Complete streets is the notion that when you build a roadway, you're building not just the asphalt between the curbs, but you're also building commercial nodes on the outside of the curb portion, land use decisions. And so you're building roads for all forms of users, not just cars, but pedestrians and bicycles and small businesses. And so as we go through for instance, the Broadway widening land use discussions, Diana and our complete streets policy will be in the right place at the right time to help make sure that we're preserving as much of those small local businesses as we can. So she's one. We have a new IT director. We our parks director is new, and so Mike Ortega is really moving forward in filling those positions.
How's the sports front look downtown?
Well, we've got the start of the arena football team coming up here very shortly, and the Roadrunners are really our anchor tenant in the TCC. Who are in the beginning of their season, and they're doing pretty well, actually. So their attendance is up higher than what I had anticipated it to be when we first signed our contract with them a couple of years ago. They're just north of 3,000 people per game in average attendance. So, yeah, a lot of positive things. And those are the kinds of activities that Visit Tucson loves to, send back to, Chicago and Detroit and Philadelphia at this time of year, saying, hey, if you want to see some hockey, but you don't want to have to fight a snowstorm to get there, come on and visit us in Tucson for a couple of weeks during the winter season.
All right, we're going to wrap it up with you less than a minute. Your closing remarks for us in 2018. How does everything look as we approach 2019 from your point of view?
Things are on an upward trajectory. The city is doing well. We've really worked hard to engender trust with this community. And as I mentioned earlier, the proposition's passing. And I guess you could juxtapose that to the county bond failing yet again. There is a notion that within the city of Tucson, the governing body and our city staff and city manager have worked hard to develop a trust with our folks, and I think that showed.
All right. Councilman Kasacek, we appreciate the time. We'll look forward to your visit with us in January, and enjoy all the Santas and all the holiday displays that your wife has put up around the house and your property. Thank you.
Thank you, and you guys have a wonderful holiday.
Thanks very much. Steve Kasacek with us for his monthly visit to the Buckmaster Show. Coming up in just a few seconds, we'll meet the newest contributor to the Buckmaster roster. These are over two dozen people who are outstanding in their field that come and visit with us on a regular basis. We'll meet our contributor on faith. Very appropriate this time of year to be talking about faith and the holidays. That's next on Buckmaster.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Welcome back. The Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. We're so excited about what's going on down here. Studios coming along. Now we actually have, looks like, new microphones that are ready to be planted. So in our business, when you see the microphones, get ready to get into the studios. We're getting close. As Bustos Media, our new owners, not only of KVOI, but 106.3 The Groove, they'll also be here at the station. So we're moving along here, folks. Things really exciting as we get ready for the 2019 year. Another thing I'm very excited about, one of the things I'm most proud, in fact, about the show, which begins our ninth year on the radio, that means eight full years. We begin year nine on January 3rd, is the outstanding roster of more than two dozen regular Buckmaster Show contributors. And we have a new one. Our newest contributor is with me in studio, the Reverend Robert Hendrickson. He's the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith. Father Robert, how are you, sir?
I'm wonderful, and thank you. And it's been a real joy, and I was honored that you asked me to do this, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And I was thinking about, because under the title or the of spirituality, I thought, well, I don't want to say contributor on religion, because that has, for some people, it turns them off. So I'm thinking faith, because if you ask 10 people, Father Robert, what's your definition of faith, you'll get 10 different answers.
That is true. And it's not the easiest thing to dive into. And I think one of the challenges for me is I think belief and faith often get conflated. And I think there are two different things. Belief is the sort of assent to a proposition. So someone says, I believe in X, Y, or Z that has been presented to me. Faith to me is something deeper. Faith is the state of being in the way in which one's life, the way one acts, the way one presents oneself, the way one serves. How is all that changed by assenting to the doctrinal belief? So faith is more of a state of being to me, and it's about how do we bring our whole self and our whole life into the world, and how do we sort of let our faith, our belief, change us and change the way we interact with the world?
And faith really carries over to just about every religion. And I know you've studied Eastern religions, and you've traveled extensively to Asia. How does that all fit in?
You know, what you notice, and it's a little different in the West in a couple of ways. When you go to the East and to Africa and other parts of the world, there's this deep belief that there is a world we can't see with which we are in connection, relationship, and that has an impact on the world around us. And I think we've sort of tried to throw that off with this sort of post-enlightenment sort of approach to knowledge. And I think we're failing, because I think what has happened is we are leaving huge amounts, kind of huge reservoirs of wisdom behind in this pursuit of a kind of technocratic approach to information in the world. And we're losing our ability to be human with one another. And I think if faith does anything, it makes us more fully alive. Sort of Gregory of Nazianzus, a very early preacher in the church, was famous for saying that the glory of God is the human being fully alive. And I think that if faith does anything, it animates us to be our whole best self in the world. And it does it in such a way that we are held to a higher standard always, and held to a standard that we don't always see and maybe don't even always believe in, but we know is there. And so when you talk about sort of how does this work in other places, that there's a way in which the day-to-day, almost hour-by-hour life is shaped by someone's faith in ways that are, you know, we here in the U.S., if we get Sunday to Sunday, that's an achievement for a lot of people. But when you go, I was just in Nepal this past summer, and you know, the days were marked by presenting different offerings to these sort of altars that were in the in shops and houses, and so people at different points of the day would put a piece of fruit or a drink, a bottle of water or something, and you know, it was this wonderful observation of the kind of the way that the days were completely suffused with this engagement with the world they can't see but know is there.
Certainly not a Sunday only.
No, it was not a Sunday only sort of faith at all. No, and I think that's one of the things that is certainly part of our tradition. If you go back and you know, there's this when you there are some neighborhoods that still do this. So if you go, I lived in New Haven for a while, And so on St. Joseph's Day, you went and bought Zeppoli's, this Italian pastry. And there was just this way that your life was marked by that pattern of the life of faith and the liturgical or religious traditions you had inherited and were going to pass on.
Father Robert is with us. He is our contributor on faith. And before we go to caller Matt on the live line, I want to ask you, we were hearing from Councilman Kasacek about the monastery, the Benedictine monastery. What's the connection? This is an order that now is in search of a home or what? Give us a quick bottom line.
Sure. The Sisters of Perpetual Adoration are the order, and they have what's called a mother house, which is their sort of headquarters in Missouri. And the sisters here have moved back to Missouri. And so the property was sold, as people heard. Mm-hmm. There was an order called, or a group of folks called Oblates, who are people who pray with and are mentored by the sisters. And they were looking for a home. And that group of about 80 people mm-hmm. has ended up at St. Philip's in the Hills. It's a wonderful group of people from multiple different traditions, some Roman Catholics, Methodists, Episcopalians. And they meet monthly for prayer and for different types of service together. And so it's been a joy to get to know them. It's been it was a wonderful opportunity to be able to provide a home for them when they were looking for one.
So the Benedictines have now a home here
they
in
do.
Tucson. Mm-hmm. Let's go now to caller Matt, who would like to join on the live line. And Matt, you're with Father Robert, our newest contributor. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I'm welcome aboard, Father Robert.
Thanks.
Look forward to hearing you on the show. I think it's a great subject for the holidays, especially, you know, I noticed that, you know, today they've even taken, you know, with Buddhism and meditation, they've managed to commercialize it to the nth degree and turn it into apps. And it's all good for, you know, the health and well-being. But they always seem to take the spiritual side out of it as much as possible, which is sad because I think that is a part of, you know, what makes faith faith. And my favorite saying, and I'll end it with this, is I read a book almost 15, 20 years ago from, I think it was an ex-priest named Thomas More, and he had a quote in there, and I always use it, faith is continuing to believe even in the face of evidence to the contrary. And I just, you know, especially when we hear bad news and things like that, I always turn to that. Anyway, thank you, and I look forward to more on this, hearing more. Take care.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate that. You know, your point about Buddhism and being commercialized, the challenge, I think, right now is that so much of faith is being presented as a sort of self-help guide. It's just one more sort of hobby you might take on to improve yourself. And really what faith is, it's the deep engagement and pursuit of the ground of our being. And so that's a very different thing. And if you notice, every religious tradition is always calling us to look outward. You know, it's always calling us to look at the other person, to look out for how we can do the most good with the time and gifts and resources that we have. That's the constant call to us. And so I think that when that becomes a sort of commercial pursuit, then the self-offering has to kind of get taken out of it to make it a little more palatable and more sellable. So I think that may be the difference between what you're talking about, the sort of mass-marketed spiritual experience versus a lifelong deep commitment faithful commitment.
Father Robert, I know you're giving it a lot of thought. What's your Christmas message this year?
Oh, you know, I'll probably just wing it. No, you know, my message this year, actually, it intersects with a lot of this, and it's about, there's a this thought right now that fewer and fewer people believe in culture. And if you go to Europe, you see sort of empty cathedrals and things. And the challenge in the United States is not that fewer people believe. I mean, I've discovered 75% of people believe that there is incontrovertible evidence that aliens have been on Earth. Now, what's the evidence for that?
Right.
60% of people believe that dreams can predict the future. Mm-hmm. There are now more people who self-describe as Wiccans or pagans than there are members of the Presbyterian Church USA. It's not that people don't believe. It's that the church has not done a credible job of saying, what does this story, the story we're about to go into on Christmas Eve, what does this story mean right now? And we get hung up on the details about, well, was it a barn or was it not a barn? What time of year was it? All this sort of stuff. How many cows were there? But we need to get hung up on the meaning again. We need to get hung up on love coming down amongst us and challenging us to love more deeply. And so I think the more and more we can get caught up in the meaning and stop obsessing about the details, I think that perhaps the richer we'll all be for the engagement.
And stop worrying. Everybody's just so worried. Oh, my goodness, I didn't remember this person. Isn't there a line in the gospel about worry will gain you like 1 second more of life or something?
There's actually a lot. Scripture has, I always thought this was funny. There are 366 exhortations to do not be afraid in Scripture.
Wow.
Which I always say it's 366 because it's one for every day and two for Stewardship Sunday when you're asking for pledges. But but it's there's a constant exhortation because that kind of busyness and anxiety is rooted in a quest for affirmation. And really what faith does is it says you are who you are because God made you there, made you who you are and put you where you are and gave you all you need to be loved by God. And if that you can dwell in that kind of faithfulness, it kind of begins to chip away at the anxieties that we have from day to day. And so I always wonder, you know, we're always in this quest for a perfect Christmas, and I wonder if Mary thought that was the perfect Christmas, right?
Bob Dio, did you want to join in here real quickly, Bob?
Yeah, don't worry about the future, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Isn't that right,
yes,
Father?
Something like that.
Yes, I mean, I think the biggest thief of joy is worry about the future and anxiety about the past. And I think all we can do is sort of be present to where we are now with whom we are with right now. And this is the other piece of this that I think causes anxiety.
I think that's a great way to end it right there. Father Robert is our contributor on faith. Great debut for him on the program. And Father Robert, we want to wish you and yours a joyous Christmas and a healthy and happy New Year to your lovely family.
Thank you so much. Thank you to you as well.
Thank you. And I want to tell everybody about my favorite bakery in town, Father Robert, and this is pretty close to your neck of the woods. Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle. And, you know, Kringle, Kris Kringle, just perfect for the holidays, right? Well, stop by Mona's, pick up all of your holiday goodies. They've got all the great holiday cookies. And in that Danish tradition that Steve and his team up there at Mona's with Steve lived for years in Denmark, and he does a great Danish Kringle. We brought one here to the station. Everybody enjoyed it very much. Go to monasdanishbakery.com for more information. There's also a link on my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link to Mona's. There's a link to all of our commercial partners, our friends, our contributors. Father Robert's bio is now up there on the contributors page. You can find out more about him. So lots going on at buckmastershow.com. Of course, all of our programs, pretty much every show we have done since 2011 when we launched the project, is archived and easy to use there. We'll be right back. Viro Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
It is the Buckmaster Show. Now our contributor on history, Mr. Ken Scoville, is with us. Ken, how are you, sir?
I am fine.
We're going to be talking a little bit about Christmas's past in the Old Pueblo, but before we do, I want to urge all of our listeners, if they have some time off, to head over to historic Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We just sent a friend over there. He came back and said, boy, they've got everything really decorated nicely. And Ken, as you know, Silver City in that area has some lovely Victorian homes.
I hate to say it, I've not been to Silver City.
I can't believe it. Now, well, I got to put you on the list to get over there. Yes. Because I will tell you and our listeners that they have some beautiful turn-of-the-century Victorians in the area, and they're all decked out in kind of old-timey Christmas decorations. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, only a three-hour drive, and the starting place, southwestnewmexico.org. And speaking of Christmas's past, what was Christmas like here in the Old Pueblo in years past,
well,
Ken?
Well, I just want to put a little tag in. I was listening to your previous guest.
Yeah, with Father Robert.
Right, and one of my favorite quotes from Einstein is that those of us that, that believe and understand physics know that there's no past or future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something for all your listeners to think about. It's all one big continuum.
Yeah, because Father Robert was talking about trying to live in the immediacy and try to engage with whatever you're doing, you know, concentrate on who you're speaking with. Like right now I'm speaking with you and I'm not worrying about yesterday and I'm not worrying about tomorrow.
Right, and I'm going to talk about the past.
There you go. You brought some photos in.
Oh, well, I'll
set after all, it's radio.
Yeah, it's radio, but I thought they're great photos. But anyway, yeah. Just to sort of set things up, it's interesting how human endeavor is pretty cyclical. And Christmas, really, and what we know of as Tucson, started downtown. And it's gone full circle. By the 1960s, with suburban development, everything went to the malls. And now everything's back downtown. The Christmas lights are back downtown, the celebrations, the tree, the parade, all that's back downtown, which I just think is a wonderful cyclical nature of history. And Christmas time, no matter what the era in Tucson, it was always about how is the economy doing? What is next year going to be like? So even like today and the discussions about next year, always been that. I think one of the timeless things is, and I recently did a walking tour in Congress with a Christmas theme, and I did a little bit more research, how important Santa Claus has been in this town. Mm. This is a picture about 1911 I'm showing Bill, and has Santa on horseback.
Oh, I love this.
And then all of his assistants and everything are on burros loaded with gifts.
Oh my
to go
goodness.
Down the street and give out gifts in Tucson. So this
Santa
is about
Santa on horseback from 1911. There's the whole gang with Santa on horses.
And then they made it down the street, and now they're at Stone and Congress. And now you can see them up a little closer like this and handing out gifts.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might be headed to Steinfeld's department store.
Huh.
Because
when did Steinfeld's open up?
Oh, it was part of Zeckendorf, which was earlier on. That was his uncle that Steinfeld worked for 30 years before he bought his uncle out.
Wow.
And then moved over to the southwest corner of Pennington and Stone.
Hmm.
Now, this is 1930, and this is the train depot, and there's just a crowd there for Santa Claus, and Mr. Steinfeld, Albert Sr., is standing there on the next to the car. Santa Claus is there again, and I'm sure he did a lot of promotions through Steinfeld's department store. And then, and again, showing the different eras and different times, but Santa is timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last picture, now the burros and the donkeys are gone. This is 1955 at the same corner. Santa's up there. Traffic bumper to bumper. It's the day after Thanksgiving, and we're all ready for the Christmas season in 1955.
Wow, it was a huge crowd there in 1955 for downtown.
It was just
it's kind of like we've gone full circle.
So that whole full circle thing.
With downtown. So Santa, Father, Christmas has been a really part of our celebration big time.
And another interesting thing, no matter what the era, I think Tucson, because of our social conscience, has been a very giving town.
Mm-hmm.
And even back in the 1870s, gamblers and saloon keepers tried their best they could to make sure everybody would have a good Christmas dinner. And then the gamblers would go around through the streets, and we're talking Tucson, 1870s, 3,000 people. If you got east of Congress Street, you were out of town. But they would throw pennies and coins from the wagon, and then all the kids would grab up all the coins.
Now, the saloon keepers would they do like a Christmas dinner there at the saloons or what?
Well, I brought my favorite quote
that
segue into this. This is from George Hand's saloon diary. He kept a diary, and this is December 24th, Christmas Eve, 1875.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what his diary said. Warm this morning. A company of cavalry left Camp Lowell this morning to keep the Cerna party on the other side of the Mexican line. Cockney Jack Upton is making eggnog for tomorrow. Also Duff, which was pudding. Charles Scheibel's wife died this morning. I went to a dance that evening and danced a few times. At 12, I went to church. Again, everybody in the main early cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge crowd. I stayed in over an hour, came out and lost Joe. Now, I think Joe is one of his dogs. He had a lot of pet dogs.
Uh-huh.
Went home, stayed a while, then went back at 2 o'clock. Got in the church again and found Joe waiting for me. Went to bed tight. Tight meant he got a little high from having a couple of beakers or something before he went to bed.
Maybe some homemade
eggnog. And give it a little zap or something.
Yeah.
So there's a timeless nature to all kinds of humor.
What was the pudding you said? What was
it was called Duff.
Duff.
D-U-F-F, but it was today what we think
kind of
as pudding.
Like a plum pudding or something?
Something like that. Things passed down.
Mm-hmm. When was that Mr. Hand kept those diaries, George Hand?
He was actually in the Civil War and kept some diaries during the Civil War. But we're talking from about 1873 to about 1881.
Mm.
There's some of them are lost. But they are the most fascinating look of anybody on listeners like diaries because he's a working class person. He actually owned a saloon with another partner, and they liked to drink, but they managed their drinking pretty well. And it was a whole different life that his bar, everything was long gone.
I wonder where they got their Christmas trees in those days.
Well,
I wonder if they went up to like Mount Lemmon or...
Well, actually closer would have been to the Santa Rita's.
Santa Rita's.
Go up to Santa Rita's. And then after the railroad arrived, 1880, and by 1890, it made business sense to bring trees in.
Mm-hmm.
And as a promotion, the merchants would give the bigger trees out to the schools and some public areas. And then also have raffles for turkeys.
Hmm.
So they really wanted, food was a big deal. Not everybody always had food or the kind of, so people wanted to make sure that everybody had a good holiday meal.
So the trees started arriving commercially like around 1890?
Right, on the train. Yeah. And then also tying in with the Victorian era.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see this with all kinds of more trees.
Because I think
more
the
elaborate.
Trees, that whole idea originated with the Germans.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's an interesting combination of traditions.
Yeah.
And one other thing that would go on by this, thinking about the Victorian era, it was very stylish, and especially if you were a little more affluent, to go visit your other friends and neighbors with your buggy. So it was a big event. Levi Manning's house, which still survives downtown, was the big focal point. He'd have elaborate Christmas parties, and he would invite everybody. and sometimes even have a carousel for the kids to ride, because he was the big mover and shaker at the turn of the 20th century.
All right, Kent Scoville, we'll see you in January talking about the upcoming Dillinger Days at the 100th anniversary of the Hotel Congress.
That'll be great.
All right, thank you, Ken. Have a great Christmas
you
season.
Too.
Joyous Christmas to you, and a happy, and I always put in there the big one, healthy New Year. On behalf of Ken Scoville, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Also, of course, Bob Dio, wishing everybody the best. We'll be back Friday, tomorrow, with our Buckmaster Friday Focus interview. Have a great afternoon.